Hey, and welcome back to the Tomahawk Take podcast. I'm your host, Jake Mastriani, and with me again is Alan.
Hello, hello.
And Fred.
I think I'm here.
And guys, we are finally to the All-Star break, and we are here. It's been a rough ride for the Braves, to say the least, in the first half of the season. As we're recording this on Thursday night, the Braves are off tonight. They're two games under 500, which, I don't know, doesn't sound terrible when you say it, but when you've gone through the season and experience, it is pretty bad where this team is at right now. And they had a great chance with this stretch of games they had coming into the All-Star break. You know, they had games against the Mets where they could have picked up some ground, and they actually did win a series there. But then they go, you know, with Miami, Pittsburgh, and got Miami this weekend. And you're thinking, you know, they win each of those series, they go into the break with a winning record, and perhaps things are looking up. And, you know, they could still do that if they swept the Marlins, but I don't think anybody believes that's happening. And they blow a series to the Pirates, and that just really had everybody ready to give up on the season, myself included. You know, that's a series they probably should have swept. Instead, they score two runs combined in the first two games and drop both of those. They come back and score 14 because every now and then the offense breaks out with double digits and everybody thinks this offense is actually good when they're not. It's just the same thing we've talked about all year. I don't really want to go over it anymore, but Alan, I'm losing hope for this team right now in this recent stretch. Losing that series to the Pirates just kind of felt like the nail in the coffin for me this year, especially with the schedule they have coming up after the break.
Yeah, and here it is a week ago. I thought I had this optimistic point of view of, hey, we got the Pirates and we got the Marlins, and if we come through these guys with a winning set of series against both of them, then maybe we might be close to first place since the Mets have a test against Milwaukee. Well, what's happened? Milwaukee dropped two of three to the Mets. They had the other one postponed. We've lost two of three to the Pirates. And now we face a Marlins team that just took three out of four to the Dodgers. So the idea that we're going to go in and do something very good in Miami is quite optimistic, even more than I was last week, for sure. I got to wonder now, and we'll talk about this. You've got to start making some hard decisions about what you want to do at the deadline. Are you all in or are you all out? And there's not much in between, but my druthers right now is I still think this team has some talent and that it could be very well used if it's well supported. But at this point, I don't know how you get it well supported. Coming out of the break, we've got very tough tests on the schedule. And if you don't do something before that stretch starts, I don't know how you get through those games with a winning record. And if you don't get down towards the end of July with something that's close to the Mets, then it could be curtains for this team for the 2021 season. So at some point you got to fish or cut bait, and I don't know that I see anything happening from the Braves that's changing my mind about the mediocrity we've been seeing all season.
Yeah, and Fred, it's the same conversation we've had seemingly every podcast the entire year, is just you know, one step forward, two steps back. It seems to be the approach for the Braves this year, and, you know, try to be as optimistic as we can. And Fred, I know you're always full of sunshine, but
he's full of something.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, do you have any optimism for this team, especially after what just happened against the Pirates?
Well, I mean, look, the team has good players, you know. Acuña's having a good year. Albies is having a good year. Riley looks like he's going to be a good player finally consistently. And Anderson and Fried are, and we've seen good stuff from Kyle Buehler. I really like Buehler. I liked Davidson before he got hurt. I think those boys are going to be young boys, a boy 6'6". That young man is going to be all right, provided his arm doesn't fall off. So I think that there's a lot to like about the players on the team. The problem is the mix. You look at what's in the bullpen and you say, I don't know what anybody could do with that mess. And then you look at who we've run through left field, and everybody that, you know, comes up says, well, Almonte came up and he hit, so everybody said, oh, Almonte's going to be fine, and then Almonte went cold as a refrigerator, and now it's Arcia's going to be fine because he's played four games, had four hits, so good for him. I'm glad he did, but that swing is awfully long, and I'm thinking really good pitchers are going to make him look really bad. That doesn't mean that we should hate the players that are doing that. I mean, nobody's going out there trying to upchuck the thing. We saw Freddie playing through a sore back the other night. And if you're hurt and your team's bad, there's a reason you can say, look, boss, I got to sit. And these guys aren't doing it. They're not backing off from it. And to say they don't care and they don't fight is not true. What is true is what DeRosa said the other day. You can't fool the clubhouse. The clubhouse knows what's needed, what's missing. And they look around and they know what can and can't be done. So when they get down six or seven runs or four runs, it's pretty well over for them unless they get a bad pitcher like they did against the Pirates. So I think the future is bright. I never thought that the 60 game team was going to be a 160 game team, but there's a lot of things to like amongst this group of players. And there's a lot of reason to continue watching and supporting them because they deserve it. And look at Heredia, okay? Where would the Braves be without Heredia this year? Somebody wrote the post, and I said, I think, about Heredia. That was really on time because Heredia's been a lifesaver for the Braves. And for everybody out there who says, oh, Duvall, Heredia's got better numbers, folks. He's got a better WOBA. He's got more runs rated weighted runs created. And all those RBIs people keep telling me about, he has 60. 25% of them came against the Braves. And if his 45 RBI with runners in scoring position, 11 of those came against the Braves. All of his RBIs came against bad pitching. All of his big number RBIs came against bad pitching. Duvall hits bad pitching. That's what he's done his whole career. That's what he's doing this year. It's not his fault. That's what he does. But please, let's not make him into some sort of god, okay? Heredia is a better player than him. Heredia is a better player at the plate. He's as good a player on defense. He doesn't hit as many home runs, but he creates production. I'm proud of Heredia for coming up and never giving up. I like that in a player, okay? May not win a gold glove and he may not be with the team next year, but boy, Heredia has been a lifesaver this year. Bless him.
Yeah. And Alan, Brent touches on something that we were really talking about in our pre-podcast. And that is the fact that you can't fool the clubhouse. And yes, you know, I agree with Fred. These guys are going out there and they're trying to win every game. You know, I get that, but the demeanor of this team, it just seems off to me. Something seems off. And I think part of that's because they know what's missing. You know, they know what's holding them back. We've known it for months now. And the front office hasn't done anything about it. Now, again, it's hard to make trades in May and June, you know, when teams aren't willing to deal. But, you know, we knew coming into the season the bullpen could be a question mark. We knew the depth, the bench of this team was going to be a question mark, and if that a couple of guys at the top went down, that this team would be in trouble. You know, we knew these things coming into the season, and they've all turned out to be a problem. You know, Pache wasn't what we were hoping he could be. Was really just a 240, 250 hitter with gold glove defense. Now the defense is there, but I think he was even a worse hitter than we were hoping that he would be. Obviously, you couldn't predict the Ozuna situation. TDA gets hurt. So, I mean, Ozuna and TDA, that's, you know, two of your top four hitters in the lineup right there. And the Braves just weren't prepared with the depth to cover that. And again, like Fred said, I think you kind of can feel that in the clubhouse that they're missing those pieces. And, you know, I don't know what AA's doing. I'm not going to try to criticize him. I'm sure he's been trying to improve this team, but nothing has been done to really fix those holes. And, you know, here we are going in the All-Star break, two games under 500, and nothing's really changed.
Well, if I can jump in here quickly with the thing that Mark DeRosa said this morning when he was asked the questions, what do you do if you're the Braves? He said, sell. And everybody looked at him and their jaw dropped. He said, look, I'm on the ground in Atlanta. I watch those players. I don't know. I haven't been in the clubhouse, but I'm telling you there's something wrong there and they can't fix it. I was doing something else and I walked back in the other room and rewound the TV. What he's saying is that the clubhouse knows, like you said, the clubhouse knows there's something. He said, I don't know why and I don't know who, but the chemistry in that clubhouse is wrong. Yeah. And that's not going to change. There's nothing they can do with the current setup in the middle of the season to change that. So you sell.
Yeah. And to add to that, and I'm afraid to go down this road because I don't want to get blasted by people who love Snicker, but when a clubhouse is like that, the most common thing you're going to do is change the voice of the clubhouse, right? And the Braves aren't going to do that. Snicker is a lifelong Brave. They just signed him to a new deal. You know, there's no way they're going to change managers at this point. And I'm not even saying Snicker's completely to blame, but when you do have, you know, a clubhouse situation like that, typically the first thing a team's going to try to do is change the voice. And, you know, Alan, just all that we've talked about, you know, the Braves certainly aren't going to do that. And nothing's really been done to do anything really the past couple months when we've all seen what's kind of obvious what Fred's talking about.
Well, apart from all that, what I was going to say is that, certainly the first part of the season, you don't really see a lot of trades going on. And that's universal around baseball all the time. This year, I think it's conspired to be a little worse because you've had so many injuries and teams are clutching their prospects like pearls. And there's a lot of things going on. There's financial implications that a lot of teams have, that they're worried about money and expenses and all that kind of stuff, because they're just now in some cases getting back to full capacity in the stands. All that kind of stuff conspires together to mean everybody's sort of hunkering down and sticking with what they've got. We've got a problem coming up with this sport. We've not just the COVID stuff, but next year's CBA is going to be immensely difficult to negotiate. I think that this could certainly result in a strike next year. There's a lot of things that are going wrong that need to be resolved, and that's even apart from whatever may be going on in the clubhouse. I've got a post half written right now where I propose one of two paths. One is go all in and really just throw caution to the wind and get the assets you need to buy or sell. And I don't know which path they should take right now, but sell is starting to gain some momentum here, partly because it seems to make sense and good logic, even though fans, myself included, recoil at that notion. What else are you going to do right now? It just does not look like this team can win, even if you do go all in necessarily. And it's just a bad situation right now. And if you add something in the clubhouse being a problem as well, I don't know if maybe the Ozuna thing is tearing this clubhouse apart, people taking one side or another. For instance, that's total speculation, but looking at body language, that's kind of about the time that things seem to be changing. So maybe something else is going on that way that we don't know about, but we really need to watch closely to see what this front office does as a result, because there needs to be a reaction. There needs to be an answer to these things. And I think we're going to see it one way or another in the next 2 weeks here.
Well, the other thing I've been talking about all year is the Freddie Freeman situation. And, you know, we don't know exactly what's going on behind closed doors there, but he just hasn't seemed right to me all year. And, you know, what if he's not going to re-sign with the Braves? We've all just kind of assumed that he will, but, you know, what if he's not going to? And that's playing on his mind all year, and that plays in the clubhouse. I mean, that's certainly something that I could see playing a factor, you know, in the clubhouse. If, you know, what if Freeman's future is not part of the Braves, and he's, you know, weighing that decision and thinking about that possibility, and, you know, that's affecting his mindset, affecting the way that he carries on with the rest of the group. You know, I definitely think there's something to that as well that could be playing into it. But, you know, Fred, I think what Alan's talking about here, what we kind of want to get into next, and feel free to, you know, jump in on any of that we talked about there. But the idea of buying and selling, if the Braves are going to buy, I just feel like there's too many holes that need to be filled. You know, Alan was talking before he came on, you know, they're bottom of the league at catcher. They're bottom of the league at shortstop. They're bottom of the league at in left and center field. I mean, you got to fill at least two of those holes, and we know they need at least two high leverage relievers. That's just really a lot to ask for, you know, a team that even if you do that, may not even be able to compete with the Dodgers and Padres and White Sox, you know, of the world.
Well, that's true. And the other thing, you know, first of all, these kind of holes you can't fix during the season. This roster is bad because last off season was bad. Mm-hmm. Now it can be any number of reasons. It could be bad choices, could be lack of money, although the payroll is damn near what it was last year, was going to be last year. It could be unavailability, could be a zillion different things that we don't know about. But, you know, Alex has always said that his plan is to be good enough to get to the break and then fix whatever can be fixed at the break. Well, this year the roster started and it was not going to be good enough to get to the break. Even as it started the season, it was not, because the lineup was going to be a bat short. And then when Pache didn't hit and Riley took a long time to get going, and Ozuna wasn't going at all until before his. All of that happened to a roster that was fragile already. Here's what I'm talking about. The Houston Astros are missing Alex Bregman. You can't tell why, because the rest of the roster picked him up. They reached down and they got one of their players and they stuck him on the field, and guess what? He's hitting, and the Astros are winning. The Astros bullpen is shaky. Their starters have been, who's going to start today? And they're still winning the West, and they're going to win the West because their players coming back. Lack of depth, bad roster construction for whatever reason caused that. The Freeman thing is interesting. There's no reason they couldn't have extended Freddie Freeman in the offseason. None. And the reason there's no reason is because they've known this was coming for years. They know what his price is. This year's attendance doesn't have anything to do with that, because next year they've got all this money coming off the books and they have room for him. But it's not done. Well, why isn't it done? Did the Braves not make an offer? We haven't heard that. Did Freddie tell them don't bother? We haven't heard that. We know that Fred's in Atlanta up for sale, and I haven't heard him buying a new one. And I'm not connecting any dots here, but it is pretty clear. And again, I listened to DeRosa ask that question this morning. Why isn't Freddie Freeman signed? And everybody just looked at him because nobody knows why. And that's really the problem. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. We say this. Nobody knows why that happened. Nobody knows why this happened. Nobody knows why this guy was signed and that guy was not signed. Why didn't we do this? Why didn't we do that? Nobody knows. All we get is spin. And that tells me that the leadership, there's a problem in leadership somewhere. Whether you want to blame LMC or you want to blame McGurk or you want to blame Anthopoulos, whatever you want to blame it, at the top, that's what you're seeing on the field, because fish stinks from the neck down. Okay. And that's what we have here. We smell it on the field, but the problem is not on the field, it's at the top.
Yeah. And to me, it could only be one of two things with the Freeman situation. Either the front office just didn't approach him about it, or like you said, he told him, don't worry about it. don't bother making an offer, because I just feel like it couldn't have been that difficult if both parties were willing for this to already have happened. So for me, it's either the Braves just didn't bother to make a real offer, or Freddie told them not to worry about it, that he's going to go to free agency. To me, that's the only two possible situations, because I just have a hard time believing that if the two really wanted to, that they could have worked something out by now. So that is troubling to me. It's been something, you know, I've been monitoring and just watching all year. I feel like that is probably dragging the team down a little bit, you know, not blaming Freddie Freeman or anything. More so, if anything, I'm blaming the front office. But I do think that's playing a factor in this as far as the, you know, the clubhouse atmosphere goes. But, Alan, I know you kind of already talked about buying and selling. For me, like I said, I think you got to sell if there's something to sell. And that's really what we were talking about beforehand is, okay, so this team's bad. The lineup, the roster is bad. You know, the clubhouse atmosphere is not good. I think we've all kind of talked about that and discussed it. So you're going to sell. What are you going to sell? And I think there's a lot of, you know, guys that you could dangle out there that you could trade, but then you got to look at, okay, is that really going to make a huge impact prospect wise? And I think that's kind of where I come to and think, no, it's probably not. So is it best to just hang on to these guys, maybe make a small move or two and just hope that things turn around? That's probably where I would go with it right now, just because I don't think there's anybody that we could trade outside of Freddie Freeman. And I don't see that happening, and he'd have to approve that anyway. But I just don't see the Braves having anybody that they could really deal that would bring back, you know, a big return.
Right now, the guys that I think would be at the top of the list would have to be Charlie Morton and Drew Smyly. Both are pitching very well. Starting pitching is going to be at a huge premium at this summer. Finding guys like that are available is very difficult. So I got to think that if there is a sell to be had, you got to start with those guys, because that's going to bring you something, even if they are rentals. That'll also save the team some money, I suppose, if that's the way you want to go. But yeah, we're going to know in the next 2 weeks, whichever way this goes. And if it really is a problem in the clubhouse, it's not going to get solved by selling things, but it will maybe be an indicator that there is something else going on that needs to be fixed in the off season. So we're going to find out. But yeah, right now if I'm selling, I'd start with those two guys, because I think you can get a decent return for them. And in fact, probably a bidding war, to be honest, because there's a lot of other, I mean, for instance, okay, when the season began, everybody was kind of laughing at Kevin Gausman's qualifying offer picked up by the Giants, and thinking, well, the Giants aren't going to be anything, so Gausman will just at least be a trade chip at the deadline. Well, guess what? Giants are playing well. So he's not available. There's been a slew of injuries to starting pitchers, so all of the contenders, I can't, except maybe Milwaukee, need pitching. So you're going to literally have a bidding war for those guys. Fred mentioned earlier, yeah, we've got some bullpen assets that we actually could stand up and say, yes, we think these guys are worth it and available. But again, relievers are easy to get at the deadline. You're not going to get much in return for those guys. Beyond that, yeah, Travis d'Arnaud's coming back. It's hard to find a catcher at the deadline, but he's not going to be available until sometime in August, probably. That might be good enough for some teams, Chicago White Sox, but I don't know if that's going to be something that be willing to do. He is a free agent at the end of the year, so no big loss if you're going to sell him. Beyond that, a couple of bench guys maybe here and there, but they aren't going to bring you anything. So right now it's pretty much the starting pitchers, and that's about it in terms of actual impact to the farm system.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Fred, do you have anything to add as far as selling?
Yeah, I think that if you called the Dodgers right now and said, hey, you interested in Charlie Morton, they would send you a couple of pretty good players for that. Because they put Kershaw on the IL with a forearm thing. their Bauer's gone for a long time. Okay. So all of a sudden the rotation that was really deep isn't that deep anymore. I think Morton's brings a return. Smiley, I don't know, but maybe Smiley does too. If the Mets don't get their pitchers back, certainly Smith, Martin can bring you something in return out of the bullpen. Even Luke Jackson has got really fine numbers. He would bring something back. I know people don't like to admit how good Luke's been, but he would bring them something back. And so you've got that. That's where you are, right now. And, and Darno is, well, they said he'd be back before August. If he comes back before August and proves he can catch, the White Sox will take him, I'm sure. And, there are players you can move, that would do that. You won't get a ton. People want to trade Dansby, fine. If you can find somebody who wants him, I don't think anybody wants him in season. I think that's an off-season move. But in any case, there are players you can move. They'll bring you something back. I sort of agree with DeRosa, it's time to sell because you ain't going to fix this.
So that'll be interesting to watch. Definitely didn't come into this season thinking we'd be talking about the Braves as sellers at the deadline, but I'm fully okay with that, if that's the way they decide to go. If you can get something in return, like you said, I think Morton's probably the only one that would bring you something significant back. But, for a lot of these guys who are free agents after the season, especially the bullpen guys, I can certainly see moving them, trying to get something for a farm system that is weakening. So, even if you get somebody that cracks your top 30, I certainly think that helps out. Especially, if the Braves come to hopefully try to make some moves to improve for next year to get back into contention, that could help as well in trades down the road, when you're trading to actually get better. But we'll see what plays out. Like Alan said, we're going to know in these next 2 weeks. You got three with the Marlins this weekend. And then after the All-Star break, you got the Rays for three, the Padres for three, and the Phillies for four. And then before July 31st, you got the Mets for five games. So I don't know if you can wait that long to make a decision, but certainly after that Rays series and that Padres series, I think you'll know a lot more. If this team's still within, five games, maybe we see a small move or two to try to improve the team. But if not, I can definitely see the Braves selling off and trying to turn this thing around quickly for next year.
Anybody you trade for now can't be a rental.
Okay? Right. Yeah.
You can't go out and pick up David Peralta and say, okay, well, he's good for the end of the year. I mean, he may well be, and he's a good guy and all that. But if you're going to trade for somebody, who's a major league ready, then you want somebody who's major league ready for a year or two. You want a Haniger, or you want a Gallo, or you want somebody who is going to give you at least another year, maybe 2 years of control out there, because you don't want to give people away for nothing. I mean, if you're going to get nothing back, then you sit on them and do it in the off season when you're going to get a chance to shop them to 29 other teams instead of a couple. So there's that. The other thing, people keep telling me that, boy, you can go out and trade for Cedric Mullins. No, you can't. You just don't have that. You don't have that kind of horsepower. And if the Orioles GM did that, they'd hang him from the yard arm in the Baltimore Harbor out there, because that would just be the dumbest thing in the world. You can't get these fourth-win players for Touki Toussaint and Bryce Wilson. You just can't do that. And the, no GM's going to sell you the Marte or the Brian, the Pirate center fielder or Cedric Mullins for a bag of used baseballs and a kiss. That's just not going to happen. You got to realize where the team is and look for ways to get better and hope that the players out there, know that the players out there still need your support. You can't just turn and walk away from them because they aren't winning, because they're trying. And if you walk away from them like that, then, that's just not really a good look on you or anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, we say all this and, been pretty negative on where the team is, but we've also said it every week. It would not surprise me if this team went on a run of winning 8 out of 10 games, because, like I say, they have the talent there. Just for whatever reason, it's not clicking. And turning into wins this season. So, but we'll see what happens, like I said, the next couple of weeks here. get into the draft before we get out of here. The draft coming up this weekend along with All-Star Weekend. I like the draft. It's a lot of fun. It's not as big as some of the other sports because we don't see these players for a while. But with all the attention nowadays that prospects get, it's really become more of a popular event in baseball world. So I think it, you know, be certainly exciting to see. The Braves have the 24th pick overall. And honestly, this draft, outside of the top 10, we talked about it beforehand, it's really just kind of a toss-up. The college bats in this draft are not very good, and that's typically what you're going to see pushed up in the first round, but they're just not very good this year. The high school bats are the top position group of this class, and I wrote a post on Tomahawk Take on Thursday highlighting some of those top high school bats that the Braves could target. But a lot of those guys are multi-sport players. Some of them even committed to play football. So you're going to have to pay top dollar in order to sway them away from going the college route. And the Braves don't typically do that, but certainly could. More than likely, you're going to see them take a college pitcher. And there are some, you know, solid ones at the top or in that area in the 20 range. I wrote about Virginia's Andrew Abbott the other week. He's somebody that's probably ranked, you know, down in the 40s, 50s of prospects. I think the Braves could take it 24 and maybe try to save some money and try to sway a high school prospect later on at their 59th pick. Bubba Chandler, somebody out of Georgia, a high school two-way player that has, you know, a lot of people have thought the Braves could take if he makes it to them, but most mocks don't have him making it that far. Going back to the college pitchers, you know, there's guys like Michael McGreevy out of UC Santa Barbara that's been tied to the Braves, Gavin Williams out of East Carolina, Will Bednar, who's got a lot of run after Mississippi State won the College World Series. Those are popular names being mentioned among the Braves right now. But, Fred, I know you were part of a chat with Kylie McDaniel of ESPN recently. What is the feeling for the Braves in the first round?
The Braves will almost certainly take a picture, as you said. Will Bednar is the guy they wanted. And then he went and had that 15 strikeout game in the College World Series. And all of a sudden, he's probably not going to make it to us. But again, there are a group of pitchers who are available, at that level that are pretty much the same pitcher. So you could look at McGreevy is a good example of that. He could go higher, but he could also slip for no particular reason, other than it's Sunday. It's really that away. Gavin Williams, somebody, people have got us, mocked with Gavin Williams. He fits there pretty well. You could go with Kai Bush. Kai Bush is somebody who fits in that well and who you might get under slot for that. There are just a group of them. And it really, I spent so much time listening with Kylie and the other people talking to him about the other teams and stuff today. And by the way, Kylie McDaniel was wonderful. He took questions and went into depth and bless him and ESPN for doing that. They were really, really nice to us and really treated us like one of them, which is really a good thing because sometimes we don't get that. But it was insightful. He basically said, look, these guys are all about the same player. You can throw a blanket over them, pull one out from underneath, and you've got the same player. May not be the right position, but you're going to get the same value for the player. So what do you do when you've got a bunch of players that are all relatively the same kind of player? Well, you look for who fits your team the best, who fits your team's philosophy the best, who's got the best makeup. They used to talk, Sherholtz and Cox and them guys used to talk about, they would talk to people and see which ones had the best makeup, which ones felt like they belonged on the Braves. And that's, they push them up the board for that. Dan O'Dowd said in the week, look, when you've got a guys, you have this bunch of makeup, they rank them by makeup and then they rank them by position. And then they fill according to where the system needs support. Well, the Braves at all, and to be fair, it's not just the Braves, folks. Everybody drafts pitchers first round. Everybody does, unless there's just somebody out there that's so much better than like Crutchman last year or 2 years ago. There's just so many pitchers are just so fragile. So yes, the Braves are going to take a pitcher. It could easily be Williams. It could be Michael McGreevy. I hope it's not the same Michael McGreevy that used to work for me, because he wasn't very good. I fired him. But anyway, these guys out there are all about the same. Now, would you like to take a bat at the first time? Well, yes. If you want a bat at that point, and I asked about that, I said, you could take a bat. You could take somebody like Trey Sweeney, who happens to be the guy I ran out there, because I like Trey Sweeney. First of all, he's at Eastern Illinois University. Secondly, he's 6'3", a shortstop, like sort of this Seager guy out in California. He's not as agile as him, but he's got thunder for power. He's done some wood bat hitting, and it hasn't made any difference. So you could get a Trey Sweeney or a Carson Williams, who's told teams he's a two-way player. He don't want to pitch. He doesn't care. You draft him. He doesn't want to be drafted as a pitcher. You tell him he's going to pitch. He's going to say no and go elsewhere. He'll go on to school. He's a high school guy. He'll go on to college and play shortstop. And he's another one guy like that. There's this Schwalenbach guy. He's a two-way player as well. Most of these guys are going to end up pitching. Williams won't, because unless he just tries shortstop and can't make it. But there's Gunnar Hogg. He was at Ole Miss out there. He had a pretty good season. Had TJ surgery, but he's still likely going to go. Frank Mazzucato, again, high school pitcher. There are players, though, once you get past 30 or 40, all of a sudden, boy, it's who you like. You know, there's a relief pitcher in Georgia, plays for the Bulldogs. He's got a 15.9 K per nine strikeout thing, and he's ranked number 360 on the rankings that go that high. And he may not get drafted. The Braves may be able to grab him for the 20K after, unless they feel like they want to take him for the 100K in one of the out rounds. But there's going to be players like that that are the same player. That he may be left-handed pitcher instead of right-handed pitcher. Jared Walsh is a first baseman that can hit. Maybe it's Lonnie White Jr., although he's more or less the Murray thing from Oakland last year. He switched colleges because he wants to play football and baseball. So I'm staying away from Lonnie White. But there's no reason that some of these guys who are in the out rounds couldn't be just as good as the guys in the 40 to 50 range that are going to be taken in the second, third round. Braves pick at number 59. If they want a pitcher at 59, they could maybe talk Kai Bush into hanging on for that and take a shortstop at 24 and then pay Bush at 59 and have almost the same thing as they'd taken that pitcher at 24. I found there's a pitcher out of Canada. His name escapes me because I've got them all running around in my head right now. His name is Ziegler, Colin Ziegler, or Calvin Ziegler. He's ranked anywhere from 101 to 123 to 272. But he's done 97-mile-an-hour fastball and a 12-6 hook. And so if you like Mike Soroka, he's going to have the same kind of innings on him that Mike had when he came down. And he's going to be the same. He's 18 years old. He's 6 foot and a little bit, and he's going to gain weight and strength. So you could go to 373 or 272 rather on BA list or 101 on ESPN's list and get this kid, and he could be the next Soroka for you. So because they're so close, don't get all bent out of shape if they don't take your player, because they probably took somebody just like him.
Yeah, Alan, a lot to digest there, but I appreciate that. Fred, I don't know how you keep all those names in your head, but I think that's really just the story of this draft, is that after you get, past the first seven, Marcelo Meyer, Jack Leiter, Jordan Lawler, Khalil Watson, Henry Davis, Kumar Rocker, Jackson Jobe, Brady House, those first seven or eight guys, I think most consider them to be in the top tier. Like Fred said, after that, you could mix these guys up in a bag and draw one out, and they're probably going to be about the same.
Yeah, and what it comes down to is money, fit to your organization, like Fred suggested, and perhaps the idea of going for a lottery pick here and there. it isn't like you're going to have a loss if one of these guys doesn't pan out that way. When you pick 24, you're kind of, you know, left with what you got. And Fred had mentioned earlier, and I'll go ahead and throw this in on his behalf, going the JUCO route, see if there's a junior college guys that might be draft eligible that look like they've got something good on upside. So there are a lot of routes you can go, a lot of names you can go, and I mean really it's all a crapshoot in terms of the draft anyway, and trying to figure out who's going to go. But you can never go wrong with pitching and getting reliable pitching. The trick is whether you think if you think you're going to get a frontline starter at 24 and the later rounds like that, probably not. So you got to set your expectations appropriately, but at the same time, you still got to have guys that you make picks with, and every now and then one of these picks turns to gold. So you do your due diligence, you do your scouting as best you can, and certainly this last couple of years have been very difficult for scouting. So the premium is trying to make sure that you check and cross check and get the best looks at these guys you can, and then make your best shot and see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting draft for sure. I mean, trying to guess what a team's going to do in the 20s is always an impossible task anyway, but I think it's especially difficult this year just because, like I said, after those first 7 or 8, everybody's really kind of in the same boat. I think you got to go with the 1 or 2 strategies here where either you try to take a chance at 24 on a high school guy and see if you can go over slot and take them away from college, and then hope that you have a college arm like Abbott, maybe Tommy Mace out of Florida, Doug Nikhazy out of Ole Miss, and maybe hope that they'll fall to 59 and you can get them for a little bit under slot, or go the other way around and take a college pitcher who's maybe ranks in the 50s or lower, like they did last year with Jared Schuster, and then hope that one of your high school bats who has some signability questions falls to you at 59, and you try to take them there and go over slot for them. I really think that's, you know, I think you have to do one of those two strategies in this draft if you're the Braves, because like we've been talking about, there's just not a lot of clear separation with any of these guys outside of the top 8 players there. So we'll see what they do. I think it'll be an interesting, exciting draft for sure. The draft is back to, or not, I shouldn't say back because it was more than this before, but they moved out to 20 rounds this year after doing just 5 rounds last year. It's going to start on Sunday, and that will just be the first round on Sunday, and then it'll continue to go throughout the All-Star week there. We didn't even touch on the All-Star game really, but I mean, I don't know, Brett, anything you wanted to touch on? I know the Braves got 3 guys in there. They got Freeman, Acuna, and Albies. But anything on the All-Star game? I think the Home Run Derby will be fun. I might check that out, but I'm not really a huge All-Star Week kind of guy anyway.
Well, I'm not much of a Home Run Derby guy, but you got to watch Ohtani, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, 32 home runs this morning. I don't know what he's done lately, but 32 home runs coming into the break, and he's the best pitcher on the team, and he's a nice guy. The guy, he shattered this guy's bat. It split completely in half, Red Sox, and it was laying on the field, and they threw him out at first base. Ohtani went up, picked a piece of the bat, handed the bat to him, patted him on the back, said, good try. You know, I mean, and he was smiling all the time. Just, he's like Freeman in that. He's just this nice guy. And he's a big guy and a nice guy, and he's so talented. You have to watch Ohtani. You know, somebody wrote me, asked earlier before the season started, right when it started, was he must see TV for me? And I said no. And then after he started doing this, I went back to permission to revise my comments. Yes, he is. And every chance I get, I'm going to watch him swing the bat or throw the baseball, because he's special, folks. If you're not paying attention to Shohei Ohtani, then you're missing a once in a lifetime kind of thing. This guy is just, he's so good all the way around. And his hitting coach says, look, he's better when he hits and pitches because he can't get in his own head. and think about everything like that. So he's pitching all the time or hitting all the time. He got wrapped up in it and going around in circles with it, and now he's doing both. So you've got to watch Ohtani. I am so glad that Albie's got recognition for the team. I mean, I knew Ronnie was going to make it and Freddie was going to make it. I said this at the start of the season. I believe that Albie's was the heartbeat of this team. And when Albie's is hot, the team does pretty well. And he deserves this recognition here. The little guy is he's just so much bigger than he is. He's so much bigger to the team than his size and his position and what he does with the bat. He's so much more important than that. And I don't think everybody they see Acuna, they see Freddie, but if you watch the team and Albie's, you'll see the team gravitate around him a lot. And I think he's so important to the team, and I'm so happy that he's getting his call up this year. And I sort of kind of hope Ian Anderson gets a call to take one of those broken starter spots, one of the guys that can't come. But if he doesn't, he'll get his chance, because Anderson's still a really fine pitcher, and Max will straighten it out and he'll be fine too. I'm just so happy for Albie's.
Yeah. All right, Alan, anything you add for you before we get out?
Oh, I'm going to just throw out a couple of things. Over under on 500 foot home runs at Coors Field for the Home Run Derby, I'm going to set at about 10, expecting 12 or more. I'm taking the over. Shohei Ohtani probably will win it. I think he might be. I haven't looked at the brackets, but I would imagine he and Trevor Story might end up fighting it out because of the thin air. A lot of these guys, after a tough first or second round, are going to be sucking air, trying to just be able to swing the bat by the time the third round goes around. But Shohei is from Sapporo, Japan, and that's got a little elevation to it too. So I think he's going to be able to handle the thin air and outdo Story in the end.
Yep, should be a fun, entertaining home run derby at the least. Got the futures game as well to watch. So good week of baseball with the draft, with All-Star and the futures game going on. Really great discussions today talking about the Braves and where they're at. Really did enjoy that. And if you want to read more about that, we'll have plenty of content on tomahawktake.com. So make sure that you go and check that out. Please make sure that you follow, subscribe to the Tomahawk Take podcast wherever you get your podcast. And we'll talk to you next week.
This has been the hand-wringing edition of the Tomahawk Take podcast. It's a production of tomahawktake.com and Fansided LLC, a subsidiary of Minute Media, Inc. Opinions expressed on the show today are solely those of the participants, because Minute Media allows total creative freedom, and because they have no idea what we're doing. All rights reserved. One of the musical selections used today comes to you under the auspices of the Creative Commons license, terms of which are available at creativecommons.org/licenses/by/4.0. This was a piece by Kevin MacLeod entitled Mr. Exposition, which was modified to fit in the available space. His works are featured at incompetech.filmmusic.io. All other selections used come via rights already purchased by tomahawktake.com. Thanks for tuning into the podcast today, and we hope your own decisions to buy or sell or draft are much more clear than those that the Braves face this week.